do it normally. Good morning to all. Appreciate all that are here this morning as we have gathered together to worship our God. This morning I want to talk about the topic of reputation. And so again, as with most subjects, we want to define what the word means. So I want to look at a couple of definitions. One of the definitions is defined as, or the word is defined as, beliefs or opinions that are generally held about someone or something. Might say something like this: his reputation was tarnished by the allegations that he had taken bribes. So in this example, his reputation was certainly not positive because of the allegations. Another definition is a widespread belief that someone or something has a particular habit or characteristic. And to illustrate this, we might say something like, her knowledge of the subject earned her a reputation as an expert. And obviously this example is one of a reputation that is a positive one. A reputation can apply to a person or a product. Sometimes when I'm buying something, especially when I'm buying it online and I've never bought it before, I will look at what some of the reviews say about it. And for me, those reviews help define that product's overall reputation. With people, especially for someone that I don't know very well, I will try to listen to what they say and compare that to what they do to see if that those two are consistent. So a consistency or an inconsistency in what is said and what is done help me create a reputation for that individual. So as we think about the topic of reputation, is it a biblical concept? Well, the short answer is obviously yes, it is. And so what I want to do is point out some scriptures where to show us that it is a biblical concept. And then after we look at that, we're going to look at five things that can help us have a good reputation as a Christian. So let's start in the book of Proverbs. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 22. We want to look at verse 1. Proverbs 22 and verse 1. A good name is more to be desired than great riches. Favor is better than gold and silver. So a good name, as this verse says, is the same thing, or it's synonymous with a good reputation. So, and notice that it says that good name is more desired than great riches and silver and gold. So, you know, I think we understand today that a lot of the world puts a major emphasis on what they own physically. And many go to great lengths to try and accumulate things. God, though, here says that a good name, in other words, our reputation, is more important than that great physical wealth that's described here in our text as great riches. Let's stay in the Old Testament and go to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Chapter 7 and verse 1. A good name is better than a good ointment, and the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. So again, the comparison is made, and a good name, it says, is better than ointment. When I was thinking about this word ointment, I thought about three examples or three places in the Bible where the word ointment or oil or perfume is used. Now I want to take a look at those, and the first one I want to begin with is back in the book of Matthew. In chapter 2 and verse 11, the context of Matthew chapter 2 is Jesus' birth. And the Magi have seen that star and have followed it and have come to worship him. So in verse 11, the text says this, "And they came into the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him, and opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh." Myrrh is an ointment. It's all, and that word in the Greek is often translated ointment. And myrrh in and of itself is very valuable. And again, notice who's bringing that gift and what it's associated with. They've got gold and frankincense and myrrh, and the Magi recognize that Jesus is important. So this is a gift that's worthy of who Jesus is. Another instance where ointment or oil is used is the record in Luke chapter 10 of that Good Samaritan. In Luke chapter 10, in the context of verses 30 through 37, and we're not going to read the whole context, but we're familiar with this account, and a man is beaten, and he's left some of the text described as half dead. And the Samaritan man comes along, and part of his care that he offers this individual is oil and wine that are put on his wounds. And so here's a case where oil is used to soothe pain, promote healing, etc. So again, think back to the passage in Ecclesiastes, where it talks about a good name better than ointment. And in this case, the ointment promotes both healing as well as pain, soothing pain. No, don't have a temperature. At least I don't think it. The next scripture that I want to take a look at is, and I'm sorry, I should have clicked one more time on the mouse, is John chapter 12. John chapter 12 and verse 3. And this account, again, I think we're familiar with it. And the context is Jesus is really close to his death. Verse 1 in this context says that it's 6 days before Passover. So we're within a week of Jesus giving up his life. And let's read verse 3. "Mary, therefore, took a pound of very costly perfume of pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume." So Mary takes this costly perfume and uses it to anoint the feet of our Lord just prior to his death. And so in all of these examples, whether it be oil or ointment or perfume, we see it used as a gift indicating its value. It's used for healing. It's used for anointing. And again, this is just an indication of the value of that oil or ointment or perfume. And yet, back in our text in Ecclesiastes, the good name or our reputation is better than an ointment with multiple uses. Another passage to consider. Turn over to the book of 1 Timothy, chapter 3. In chapter 3, we have Paul's writing Timothy, and he gives instruction with respect to qualifications for men who can potentially serve as an elder or a deacon. And in verse 7, we have this report. And he, speaking of the a man being considered as an elder, he must have a good reputation with those outside the church, so that he may not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Drop down to verse 10. Speaking about deacons, and these also must, first must be tested, then let them serve as deacons if they are beyond reproach. The idea of being beyond reproach speaks to a good reputation. So again, this is another case where at least men serving in these offices need to have that good reputation. Titus chapter 2 and verses 6 through 8. In the first part of the book of Titus, Paul writes to Titus, and he actually in chapter 2 talks to four groups of people: older men, older women, young men, and young women. And in verses 6 through 8, he's talking to younger men. Beginning in verse 6, likewise urge young men to be sensible in all things, to show yourself to be an example of good deeds, with purity and doctrine, dignified, sound in speech, which is beyond reproach, in order that the opponent might be put to shame, having nothing bad to say about us. So again, just look at the phrases that are used. An example of good deeds, sound in speech, beyond reproach. And the reason that this is needed, so that the opponent, their opponent, would be put to shame. So, in other words, they behave in such a way that there's nothing from an accusation standpoint that would stick, and that obviously is because of that good reputation. Couple more I want to take a look at. In the book of Acts, we've been studying in Acts chapters 6 and 7, and we actually looked at this passage, according to my records, about 3 weeks ago. So in Acts chapter 6, we have what's recorded there of men being selected to help assist the apostles with a situation that was a problem. There were certain Hellenistic widows that were being overlooked in that daily serving of food. And verse 3 says, but select from among you seven men of good reputation, full of the Spirit and of wisdom, whom we may put in charge of this task. So, those that were selected met these qualifications, and obviously, for someone to have a good reputation, then what they say and what they do in their service to God were going to be consistent from a good standpoint. Then the last passage, at least in this section of the lesson, that I want to take a look at is the Proverbs chapter 31. And again, the context of chapter 31 is talking about a worthy woman, a woman who is an excellent wife and provides for her family and others. And in verse 31, as the book of Proverbs is coming to a close, it says, give her the product of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. If her works praise her in the gates, then she has a good reputation based upon what she does. So the point in all of this is yes, reputation is a biblical topic and worthy for us to look at. So for the remainder of our lesson, I want to just ask a question and then provide five different ways. Let me back up. Ask the question of, okay, so if it's a Bible topic, then what can I do, what can we do to try and have a good reputation as a Christian? And I want to just talk about or present five practical things that we can do. So the first thing is keep your word. In other words, do what you say you're going to do. Turn over to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew 5, we know is the five chapters 5, 6, and 7. We know are Matthew's account, and we typically call this Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. At least there's the most context or the most text on that. And let's read verses 33 through 37. Again, this is Jesus speaking. Again, you have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. But I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool of God, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. Nor shall you make an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your statement be yes or yes, yes, or no, no. But anything beyond these is of evil. Stop. Yeah, we want to stop there. So, again, very simply, the text says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. And what we see in this is there needs to be a truthfulness to what we say, no matter what our statement is. You know, be honest and do what we say we're going to do. Next thing is have humility. Next thing we can do to help us with our reputation is have humility. Let's stay in the book of Matthew and go back to in chapter 5, and let's read verse 3. Verse 3 says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Some of the translations are translated, blessed are the meek. You know, meekness, humility are in contrast to arrogance. And so if we are poor in spirit, etc., that's pointing to a humility. In the book of James chapter 4, James has a lot of practical lessons for us. But in James chapter 4 and verse 10, humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and he will exalt you. So, pretty straightforward statement. One of the passages that I always think of when I'm thinking about the topic of humility is Philippians chapter 2. I call it a go-to passage when we want to point out things about humility, because we see there Paul writing the Philippian brethren about that ultimate example of humility. And I want us to read verses 3 through 8 in that context. Philippians chapter 2, beginning in verse 3. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind let each one of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interest of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which also was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant, and being made in the likeness of men, and being found in the appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. So, obviously, Jesus serves for us as the ultimate example of humility because of the way he lived his life and what he ultimately did for us. And then, as a reminder, 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 1 there, Paul writes the Corinthians there to be imitators of me, just as I also am of Christ. So certainly we need to have humility as a part of our foundation, and that can help us have a good reputation. Third thing I want to talk about is to do the unexpected. So what do I mean by that? Let's turn back to the book of Matthew, chapter 5 again, and we're going to continue reading through part of the context that we left off with. So Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 38 through 42. Jesus says there, "You have heard it that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist him who is evil. But whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. And whoever shall force you to go 1 mile, go with him two. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you." So notice that there in this context, Jesus mentions four examples of doing the unexpected. In verse 38, Jesus quotes the old law, that eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. In other words, they were allowed to respond in kind. But Jesus goes on to say, if someone slaps you on the face, do the unexpected. Turn the other side. That's certainly not expected in today. The expectation is when we're hit, we respond in kind, or greater if we think we can get away with it. And so the text talks about unexpected behavior is to not resist those who are evil, and to turn the other side of your face, or turn your cheek, as some of the translations read. In verse 40, in our context, the next example of unexpected behavior involves a lawsuit where somebody's trying to take your shirt or your tunic, and Jesus says, "Let them take your coat as well." That's certainly unexpected. In verse 41, the third example, to go that extra mile. Again, if you're forced to go the 1 mile, go that second mile. And then in verse 42, the fourth behavior is honor the request to borrow something. Do the unexpected that will separate us from how most would respond. If you think about the examples, a lot of times when we respond in the normal way, it makes the situation worse. But if we do the unexpected, then that can diffuse that situation. So doing the unexpected can help us establish a good reputation. The fourth thing that we need is integrity. Integrity is defined as the practice of being honest. Integrity is showing a consistent and uncompromising adherence to strong moral values and ethical principles. For example, if we find a wallet on the street and it has a lot of money in it, and it has an ID that would allow us to return the wallet and its contents to its owner. If we have integrity, our integrity is going to compel us to do whatever we have to do in order to return the wallet and its contents to its rightful owner. So let's look at a few passages. I want to start in the book of Job. Job Job is an interesting book from a reading standpoint. Chapter 1 in Job, Satan is wandering around, and chapter 1 records that Satan asked God God asked Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job?" In verse 8. And Satan says, you know what? You built a hedge around him. And you're protecting him, basically. And so God allows Satan to afflict him, the things that he has. Not himself, but his family and his possessions. And Satan causes a lot of damage to Job. And in chapter 2 and verse 3, it's after this, and let me just read the verse. Job 2 and verse 3, "And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job?" Same thing that he asked him prior. "For there is no one like him on earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil. For he still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to ruin him without cause." So this statement is made after the ruin that Satan inflicted upon him. And Job is said to, he's holding fast his integrity. If we drop down to verse 9 in this context, between verses 3 and 9, Satan is allowed to torment Job on a personal basis. And so he torments him with boils and things like that. And in verse 9, his wife says to him, Job is in agony, just pain. And his wife said to him in verse 9, "Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." Still, Job maintained that integrity and would not curse God because of what was happening to him. Turn over to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 9 and verse, I'm sorry, Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 9. "He who walks in integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will be found out." Stay in Proverbs and turn over to chapter 28 and verse 6. "Better is the poor who walks in his integrity than he who is crooked, though he be rich." Again, that word "better" is used. And then, we've already looked at this passage, but in Titus chapter 2, again, in that context where Paul is talking to Timothy about young men, verse 6 says, "Likewise, exhort the young men to be sober-minded in all things, showing yourself to be a pattern of good works and doctrine, showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility." And that reading is from the New King James. When I read it from the New American Standard earlier, the word integrity is not used. And the New American Standard has the word purity. And so I dug a little bit deeper because I wanted to see why there's sounds like a discrepancy, but it's really not. The word in the Greek, it's a dual word, and I like dual words because they have obviously two parts to them. But the main part of the word is a word that that means corrupt. The bulk of the main part of the word means corrupt, but it has the alpha character as the first character, which negates it. So it's not corrupt. So not corrupt can be pure. If you have integrity, you're not corrupt. So both translations are accurate. So those that have integrity don't have a corruptness in their actions and words. And if we want to have a good reputation, then we obviously need integrity. And then the final thing I want to talk about is that of the control of our tongue. I want to start, again, these passages are reminder passages for us. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6. Text says, "Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned as it were with salt, so that you may know how you should respond to each person." If our words are presented with grace, seasoned with salt, then we don't leave ourselves an opportunity to have our reputation tarnished. In James chapter 1, and again, James has just a lot of practical things that can help us live the way we need to. James chapter 1 and verse 26. "If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless." So if we can't control our tongue, then our religion is going to be worthless, and there's going to be no way that our reputation can be positive and good. I want to stay in the book of James and this time go over to chapter 3 and verses 1 through 12. And again, we're not going to read this whole context, but I just want to kind of walk our way through some of the verses. Look at verse 2. "If someone does not stumble in what he says, then he is able to control the whole body as well." Verse 5. "The tongue is a small part of the body, yet it boasts of great things." This talks about how a great forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And I think about a lot of the stuff that's going on today. We just seem to see daily words that just light a fire of rage within folks. We saw in class this morning, in the case of Stephen, his words just lit a fire within the council. In verse 9, in this context, the tongue blesses God and curses men who are made in the likeness of God. And obviously that's a contrast with good and bad uses of our tongue. And verse 10 makes the point that blessing and cursing come from the same mouth, and it should not be so. So if we want to have a good reputation, then we need to control what we say. So in summary, obviously our reputation as a Christian is important. And we've talked about five things that can help us do that. Keep our word, have humility, do the unexpected, demonstrate and have integrity, and then control what we say. And really all of this can be summed up by saying, just be a good, faithful Christian. I want, again, thank you for your attention this morning. Please consider this. And I guess kind of a final remark. Even if we do these things, is everybody going to like us and think we have a good reputation? No, they're not. That's not going to be the case with some people. Just remind ourselves that we understand that we don't have a control over other folks, but we do have a control over ourselves. And so we need to focus on what God has commanded us to do. So I commend the lesson to you. Thank you for your attention. If there's anybody here that needs to respond to the invitation, please take advantage of that while we stand and sing.